Welcome back to another Co-Opticast. This is Co-Opticast, episode 83 for March the 12th, 2012. We've got a full house tonight. We've got Locke, we've got Jason, we've got Mike, and we are extremely happy to be here. Locke pointed them out for us.
That's right.
So let's jump right into the what you've been playing section, because, I think we've all been playing a little game called Mass Effect. So, Locke, why don't you start?
Throwing down.
How's your Shepard experience?
My Shepard. It's doing pretty good. I imported my guy with no troubles from Mass Effect 2. I know a lot of people over the interwebs have been having some trouble with importing their characters. So far, I've done a couple missions. I heard that it was a very good idea, if you're a fan of the series, to grab the DLC, so I did that. Played the From the Ashes DLC, and I'm really happy that I did that, because I won't say anything about it, but if you're a fan, it's worth your money. So,
It expands the lore in a very meaningful way.
Yeah, and it's not a case where you're like, I'll just wait till it's on sale. It's like, no, get it, because you'll use it throughout the whole game. That's all I'll say about it. So, really happy about that, and again, a couple missions in, I'm really happy to be back in this universe. I love being able to, you know, it's competent shooting with an excellent story, and that's all I can ask for this game. And then I played a little multiplayer with you guys. That was, it was interesting. It was good. Like, they did a really good job with it, I think. It's pretty limited. It's pretty fun. But I really don't see a need for it, I guess. It doesn't seem tacked on. Like, they did a good job, don't get me wrong, but I think the resources that they used on doing the multiplayer stuff, maybe put that back into the main game. I don't know. I'm only about 10 hours into the main game, so...
And if the internet is to be believed, actually complete the endings, I don't know.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a whole discussion about Mass Effect 3 and the co-op, and maybe... I don't want to touch the ending stuff just because...
Not yet.
We're not going to spoil anything whatsoever, but I just had to throw that troll bait out there.
I can tell you that my stance on the ending, without spoiling anything, is that the entire game is actually the ending. It is just the last 5 minutes that suck.
Okay, fair enough. So it's all about the journey, and you know what? I'm not setting myself up for disappointment or anything like that. I like talking to people, I like cruising around the galaxy, I like shooting dudes, so it's so far so good, like well worth my money. And what are you going to do? You're two games in and you're going to not play the wrap-up game? Like, of course. So you just want this game to be just the climax, the pinnacle of the whole series, and let it, you know, kind of go out with a bang. So I guess in that sense, the expectations are pretty high, but... What, are you going to laugh at Climax?
No, I'm laughing at Mike's face, which I do a lot of, actually.
Yeah, that's true. So, I'm having a good time with it, and I'd like to get some more multiplayer in. I think my guy is only level, 12, and you guys are... when we were playing with you guys, you were, mid-20s, so...
No, 20's the level cap. I was, like 16 or 17.
Oh, were you?
My guy's only 18 now, but I decided because I was the one who reviewed it for the site, so I needed to actually stop playing the multiplayer and finish the game.
One thing I will say, the last thing I'll say about the multiplayer, is that it does give you an opportunity to play as a class that you wouldn't normally play as. I've played as an infiltrator the whole, every Mass Effect I'm an infiltrator. I sneak up behind guys and I snipe dudes, that's my job. But being able to play as a soldier or a vanguard or a sentinel or even an adept, that's cool. I like that that's in there. You can kind of sample them. It's like a little class buffet.
Yeah. Yeah, and something I liked about the multiplayer, and we'll talk a little bit more in depth about later, is that the choosing a different race for your character class doesn't necessarily mean it's just a cosmetic change.
Right.
There's actually very big differences between, you know, what the different races can do, even between the classes.
Yeah, you look so cute in your little pink space outfit, though.
I know.
The pink Turian.
Yeah.
My pink Turian. I was so angry because I started making everybody pink, so I started trying to come up with really stupid names for the characters. And it just shows your gamer tag. Boo. When you're in a match.
Yeah.
So no one gets to see the grandeur of, you know, Mo, my female Quarian infiltrator.
That's right. But no,
and,
that was cool.
And Bears, my Turian sentinel.
Like, we probably played 3 or 4 matches, and they're only about half an hour each, which is a nice time limit. Like, you can, you know, sit down, play a match, and then if you want to hop out, that's cool. You can pick up another person.
Yeah.
So it's not a huge time investment, which is nice too. But which is the opposite of how I play the single player. It's like, I just like to sit down and play like epic.
Yeah, the day I decided I was going to beat the game, I actually ended up playing 7 straight hours.
That's
because
awesome.
I vastly miscalculated how far I was from the ending.
So, Mike, you finished it. Who else? Has anyone else finished it? Jason, you finished?
Nice. So I got
the best ending that you can possibly get, as far as I can tell.
No, my ending will be the best ending.
I was sick for 4 days. Well, I was sick for 2 days from work, and then sick over the weekend, so I did nothing pretty much but play this game. So I went through and I played all the way to the end, and then went back and saw each of the other 2 innings that I didn't pick.
Nice.
So, but my little 3-minute spiel about the game was, I agree with Mike, like, the whole game is the ending. Like, it everything just kind of wraps up in some way or other, and it is. It's like the last 5 minutes. And particularly, like, part of that, the last 30 seconds, that just kind of gives you one of those kind of moments.
So it's a Scooby-Doo ending?
It
kind of is.
They pull off a mask?
The elusive man rips his mask off, and he's old man Weatherby.
Yeah.
It was me all along!
Shepard would have gone away with it, too, if it weren't for them damn meddling kids. Here's what I missed. This happened with Mass Effect 2, and then more so Mass Effect 3. And I know it's sort of like, probably I'm in a minority with this, but one thing I really loved about Mass Effect, I know everyone else hated it, I actually liked the vehicle sections on the planets. I didn't like them for having to go around, but here's why I liked it. Out of all kind of RPGs, like, there's tons and tons of fantasy RPGs out there. Those are make-believe worlds. Like, they're a lot of them based off Earth, but they're, you know, very much like they go in the fantastical realm. For sci-fi, and particularly with Mass Effect, it was the first one that actually was like, you're going to the Horsehead Nebula, you're going to these galaxies, you're going to these stars, these systems that are real. Now, everything else about them in terms of the aliens is fake, but you land on a planet and you look up at the night sky or the whatever they have, that's, you know, kind of how it would appear and look, and that to me was really cool. Like, that immersed me more than anything else in the whole entire game. And Mass Effect 2, they cut out the vehicle sections, they got that awful scanning system instead.
See,
like,
I am in the minority because I found planet scanning to be strangely calming.
No, boo.
You are. I don't know what to do. Man, you're like the guy
was,
who like sits there.
You would
be the guy
was
in the sub who just like sit there listening to sonar all 8 hours of the shit.
Well, a lot of it was that Mass Effect 2 came out like right when my daughter was born, so I was holding a baby constantly.
It
was that like really soothing galaxy map music, and I'm just like, I'm just gonna sit here and scan this planet, and then the controller's gonna vibrate a bit, and it's just kind of yeah, it's just kind of this almost synesthesia. Just like, I'm really into, you know, in retrospect, I'm like, this is effing stupid. Why the hell am I doing this? But at the same time, I'm just like, I have really absurdly fond memories of planet scanning in Mass Effect 2.
Yeah. And it's, no, I get that.
Yeah, it's a little different in this one. You kind of let out that infamous pulse, and you kind of pick up stuff.
Which, yeah, you let out the pulse, and then you play a game of Pac-Man.
That's
I'm
okay with that.
Which, you know, it works for this game.
The Normandy would start going waka 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 whenever the Reapers showed up.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for this game what they did with it, and it works. But I just, that's something I really miss about it. And I also kind of miss some of the exploration aspects. Everything has really been narrowed down into the missions, like from one after the other after the other, and these like little narrow corridors. So again, some of this vastness that, you know, kind of got in the first game and a little bit in the second game seems to have really been whittled away now in the third. So
I think it was a trade-off, though, because you have the planet exploration in the first game, but, you know, in Mass Effect 1, you're really only going to like 4 locations in the whole game.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
that
there's
mean
there's
anything.
Much,
and in Mass Effect 2 and 3, you're going all over, so you you either
there's definitely
get,
a trade-off. Yeah.
You either get a more varied campaign, or you get the option to like go land on an empty planet and look around. And I you know, that was fun, and it was cool to look at, but you know,
oh,
at the
okay,
same
sorry,
time,
wait,
I
go.
I definitely was more in the camp of, you know, Mass Effect 2. And yeah. I would say after 3, Mass Effect 2 is still the best game in the series.
Yeah.
That's cool.
No, I think it definitely tried a good balance. But so, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, and we'll talk more about the co-op later, but that was my 2 cents toss in about the single player.
Mm-hmm. What else have you been playing, Jason?
I got a chance. A Jolly Corpse, one of the indie developers out there, is putting out a game called Wiv and Keep, and they gave me a hands-on preview of the alpha. They sent me some of that, and I just posted up today, actually, the thoughts on that. It's a lot of fun. I mean, like, anyone who played any sort of platformer, Load Runner, what was it, Spelunk?
Spelunky.
Others that, yeah, there's others that I'm just drawing a blank on. Lilo, what was that? Lilo Adventure
Island.
Or whatever? No. That's the one. But like back in the NES days, there was like an 8-bit Lilo
Adventures of Lolo.
Yeah, there we go. Reminds me a lot of those games, and I love those games. Playing up, like those are the games I kind of play with my family. Like we would take turns, or if there was co-op, we'd play co-op together. So playing a game like this was a nice callback to that. It's all puzzle based of you know, there's the two characters, Wiv and Keep. And so there's, you know, in a little room, they have to get to the exit. And they start pretty simple of, okay, you just got to hop over here and use one of the people as a stepping stone to get up to the exit. And then it's, okay, now you got to push a box onto a button to open up the exit and get there. To, okay, now you've got to drop some dynamite to get rid of this. And while that's going on, you got to push this other thing so it times and falls correctly. So, I mean, they get more and more complex with the puzzles, but they're always that right level of puzzles, like, Portal 2, one of the great things about Portal 2 was that it always was that good learning curve that you never quite felt like this was just impossible to solve. You just mm-hmm. had to come about it a little bit differently. And I think they do a good job with that and Wiv and Keep of, you know, you may walk away from it for a little bit and then you'll have a sudden moment of, you know what, I bet that's the answer. And so you rush back and you do it and sure enough, like, it works. And then you just, you know, so like you're motivated then to go on to the next thing. And okay, what's the next level? What's that look like? What's the next one? So it's got a lot of that hook to it. Right now it's local co-op, and the online co-op portion of it is kind of in the alpha part of that testing that they're working on. There's a little bit of bugs and drop games and glitches like that when I was playing with it, so they're trying to stabilize all that, but the local co-op is great. It's drop in, drop out, so you know, someone can just come in, pick up another controller and play with you, and it looks to be a lot of fun, so I'm definitely looking forward to that release sometime this summer is when they're shooting to get that out.
Cool.
I like the sprite-based art style, definitely.
And the soundtrack is really good to match. I mean, we loved so much on Jamestown for different reasons, but one of it was its soundtrack. The soundtrack for Wiv and Keep, completely different composer, but he does a really good job with it as well. I mean, like, it has that same kind of feel of classic, but still, you know, modern, nice. Sort of, that they manage with that. So it's good to check out as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Locke, we missed one that I see you've been playing recent.
Not so much playing, more just getting played.
Yeah.
I got Street Fighter Cross Tekken at the same time as Mass Effect 3. I probably put the same amount of time into each.
And in Cross Tekken, you've just been slotting gems, right?
Pretty much. It takes me quite a while to set up gems and characters. I won't go into it too much. I'll say that the fighting is a lot of fun. I really enjoy fighting games. This one... it's good. Like, the fighting stuff is good when you boil it down to that. Everything else surrounding it is a little annoying. Going through, and yeah, Mike, going through all the gems and setting them up. Mm-hmm. Each character has 3 gem slots that they only equip 2 by default. And if you plan on using a character, you have to go in manually into a couple menus and equip them. But yeah, playing a lot of that. Testing out different characters, trying to get good. I don't play it enough to get really good, so it's the case where I like I was saying before, Nick, I get frustrated because I watch like people who are good play, and I'm like, oh yeah, I could totally do that, and then I go
I
and play.
I understand what they're doing.
Yeah, I understand how to do that, and then my brain tells my fingers to do things, and my fingers don't do them,
and like then this.
But you're like, I can, I'm totally like Daigo. I can parry Chun-Li's super.
Yeah, exactly. It's just back down, bat like. But no, it's really fun. I'm glad I have it. It's a fighting game though. You do get frustrated, and that's how you learn. And I'll keep plugging away. The co-op features I'm playing on 360. It's a little limited because you're not able to play two people locally against anything else. Like you can't do any of that, which is kind of stupid. Like,
well, you could do it locally. You could do the arcade mode.
Well, you can do that, but you can't. Like, what I'm doing right now is just playing online with a buddy. Like, we're teaming up against other like online versus partners, and that's it. Like, we haven't been able to do. You can't go through arcade or anything. So
right,
that's it's all right. Like, arcade's fine. It's nothing. It's no Mortal Kombat, but yeah, like. If you like fighting games, you already own this, and if you don't, like, it's not the best place to jump in, because there is a lot of new mechanics. Like, the Tekken characters are really cool. It's really neat to see the art style and how they incorporated their moves, and they did a good job of it. Like, it's a good game. Some of the online stuff is broken, like,
Bug.
Yeah, the sound bug. That's the one thing. You might not think in a fighting game that sound matters, but there's a lot of audio cues that you'll pick up on subconsciously, and the sound just cuts out, and it'll lag behind, and you'll be like, awesome, this is great. You guys didn't quality test this, so Capcom says they're fixing it, apparently, but who knows? So that's Street Fighter Cross Tekken. Frustratingly fun.
Excellent.
You know, the best thing that came out of that whole game was in the marketing materials. Producer Yoshinori Ono from Capcom visited like the 1UP offices, and he reenacted the scene from Street Fighter where M. Bison is talking to Chun-Li, and he's like, "For you, the day M. Bison came to your town was the greatest day of your life. For me, it was a Tuesday."
Yeah.
So he reenacts that whole thing. And, of course, like, you know, because he's learning how to speak English in a very heavy accent, and you just watch the thing, and it is wonderful.
We can't repeat it because that would be racist.
That's right. Exactly.
You can watch him do it and laugh.
But
exactly. Because he agreed to.
You know, if you're somewhat interested in it, you know, you'll be able to grab it in a couple months for $40. It's great to have, like, if you just want to fool around at parties or with friends and stuff, it's really cool, like... The tagging is fun. You can have four players. There's a mode where you can have four players playing at once, and it's just a mash fest. And then, yeah, if you want to get more technical, you can do the tag-ins and stuff. So it's a lot like the Mortal Kombat, the tag system. So I enjoy that. I'll bust it out when I have friends over, just because, you know, if you know how to throw a fireball, you're okay in that situation.
So, you know, other than Mass Effect 3... For me, I've been playing a lot of Unit 13 on the Vita, which is really good. Like, it's surprising the depth that they kind of put into this little game, and then still gave it the whole like mobile spin.
Yeah,
they split it up instead of making like a story mode. They basically split it up into 36 like arcade style missions. I guess arcade isn't really the right word, because it's a very simmy game. Like, you take like one or two shots and be dead. You know, so it's kind of hardcore in that sense. But they have, like, different styles of missions and stuff to play. You know, like, some of them will have you sneaking in. You can't trigger any alarms and stuff like that. Other ones will have you... Actually, there's, like, a clock. So you have, like, 2 minutes, and you have to get to an objective and complete it. And then that gives you another clock. And so it's kind of like a race to do things quickly. They have missions called Elite Ones, where there's no checkpoints, and the guys are kind of extra hard, and you don't get a regenerating health thing or anything like that. But yeah, so there's a good variety of missions. The only downside is there's maybe 6 maps, 7 maps. They're pretty huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're big areas, and they just kind of like basically rework the mission so you go in different ways and reuse the same thing.
Ah, so it's Dragon Age 2.
I haven't played Dragon Age 2, but yeah, it's basically, you know, the reuse asset syndrome. But the co-op though, and it is. Basically, it's the same thing as the single player. The same exact missions. It seems to just basically scale up the enemy difficulty. There's not necessarily more enemies, but you can be one-shotted. You can get sniped and you'd be down. But there's a revive mechanic. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's a separate basically a separate score for co-op. And that's kind of like the whole focus of the game. It has this whole social meta thing over top of it. There's like a score ticker at the top. It tells you when people beat your score and when friends have unlocked missions and unlocked items for your characters and things like that. So that's kind of like what they're really pushing to go back with. I like what they're trying to do with it. It's just, after, I think I completed like 24 of the 36 missions, and then they just get ridiculously hard.
Mm-hmm. It's like dudes everywhere.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you never see them coming, and then by the time you do, you're dead. And the problem is, the co-op would be great because it could help you complete those missions, but it doesn't save your progress as completed for the co-op. Like, you get the credit, you get the experience, if you unlock anything, that's fine.
Right.
But if you needed to beat that mission and you wanted to see the other things, the co-op doesn't do that for you. So that's kind of a disappointment.
Huh.
But like graphically and like the audio and stuff on it, like it's console quality. It's I don't know. The Vita just continues to amaze me, just what the little device can do. And
mm-hmm.
So it's my lunch break buddy. I used to watch episodes of Nova on Amazon Prime. Now I play my Vita.
I used to expend my mind and learn about things, and now I play video games.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Nice.
Sony's ruining things. So.
Oh, that's fine.
But, yeah, so that's about it. Let's move on.
I only played Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that more,
played
so.
36 hours of Mass Effect 3.
Reviews up.
And the reviews
it's up. A really
it's
good review,
like
80, too.
It's only 86 pages long.
It's not often I sit around and praise, but it was a really good review, Mike.
Oh,
so.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Andrew said that, too, and usually he's just like, thanks, when I send it, so. You know, I must have done something right.
All right, so
paid
let's
us the money
some,
under the table.
Some interesting stuff that's been going on. And our first story actually gets a great update today.
Yes, it does.
Today was, I don't know about you guys, but today was just absolutely insane for news in general. Not just gaming
news. It's
the
late 90s all over again.
It was just
there's
like,
a new
yeah.
Baldur's Gate coming.
Yep.
And a freaking Diablo game coming.
Yep.
It's like my senior year of high school all over again.
And only half as awkward.
Yeah. So, basically the story went that Blizzard put out a little blurb and said, you know what? We're not going to delay Diablo 3 anymore. We're going to cut PvP from it for now. It'll come at a later time. We want people to play the game, and we want people to play co-op.
Yeah.
So, that was the good news. And only, like, not even a week later, we got a release date.
Yeah, we did.
So they weren't kidding. So May 15th, Diablo 3.
Put it in your calendars. Bam.
I asked for that day off work.
Did you?
Yes.
That might have to be a sick day.
Yeah.
I've taken too many sick days recently.
I asked for that day off work because the first half of it is going to be me staring fondly at the collector's edition box that will be arriving on my doorstep.
Did you get the email from Amazon to say, we have a release date for this item now?
Yeah, and right. I had to go in because when you pre-ordered it, they didn't have a release date, so you couldn't do release date delivery. So I had to go back in, and because it's like, you know, scheduled delivery date, May 17th. I'm like, oh, hell no. So I had to go back in and change that, but I was
that
pretty
for
excited.
You, out of curiosity, how much was the release date delivery for you?
Negative 1 cent.
Oh, really? It was interesting because I pre-ordered that today when I saw the May 15th announcement, and I was, like, busy doing a million things at work today, so, like, someone actually texted me, and I was like, what? And I, like, immediately hopped on my computer, clicked on the link through Co-Optimus for pre-ordering, put it on, you know, never do this before because I hate the charges, but it was, like, release day delivery, it was, like, 99 cents. I was like, I win. I win the day.
So release date delivery is usually free on Amazon.
Is
and it?
It
charges, I think they charge you for Diablo 3 because it's an oversized box. And they want to recoup some of the costs. But if you pre-order a game on Amazon, select release date, it's usually free.
Some
right
of them.
There.
Some of them. It depends. Some of them, they I think they do 99 cents, $5, and some are free. Like, it depends if it's a promotion. Like, if they have, like, the $10 off thing, they probably don't have the free release date. But, you know, it cycles between those things.
Well, they do actually just charge Canadians double to get to make up for all of your guys' savings. So pretty sure
that's what they do.
Score. So I got it for 99 cents, and I stuck it to lock.
Yeah, exactly. It's like $17 same day delivery. Aw.
That's no fun.
No, but Diablo's coming.
All right, so yeah, it's a Diablo 3. We got four player. There's four player co-op, right? Not five. I'm trying to think. I think it's four players.
It's four. Yeah. Yeah. I was actually
there's five classes, but four players.
Correct. I was in the beta again recently, and it feels like the game's pretty much done at this point.
Yeah.
Like I played it just this past Monday night or something like that, and I was like, this seems like it's ready to go.
Well, I'll keep our fingers crossed that we get some Battle.net codes for an early version of that, so we can all be enjoying that.
So yes, let's talk about how awesome it would be to get that on our podcast that our listeners can be jealous of us on.
Yes.
Release day coverage, baby.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So
let's do the unboxing video, the collector's edition.
We can all just sit there and lick our boxes.
All right, let's move on. And let's talk about Journey. And we'll talk about Andrew's review, because I want to talk. It's kind of interesting. So this started. Andrew's like, he's like, so I have this off the wall idea for the review for Journey. I was like, okay. He's like, I can't even explain it. He's like, I'll send it to you when I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay,
that's never a good sign.
So about an hour later, he sends me the link to it, and I open it up, and all I see is like 16 pictures.
It was the best review he's ever read.
I was like, okay, I see what you're trying to do.
I thought it was going to be like 16 pictures of like pugs and babies, and I was feeling like pugs, babies, and hamburgers.
Yeah, there should be a big greasy hamburger in this review. I agree.
So I get it, and I'm like, well, it's cool and it's very abstract, but we need some text. I was like, just caption the pictures or something.
Yeah.
And so he went back in, and you guys can see the review on the site. It's a one pager. It's got a bunch of pictures, got some captions, a little bit of description around it. But his point was like, you don't want to really talk about what happens in Journey, and it's so freaking cliche because it's what they've been saying all along. But like, Journey is the game is like. The core of it is how you experience it. It's what you make of it. Like, the journey is the journey.
It's just so hard to write about.
Yeah. Everything I hear is game is amazing. And I hope this weekend I can find some time to pick it up and just kind of play it. But I know, Locke, you've played it, right?
It's so damn good. I'm a sucker for that artsy video game crap, but like, if you like video games, you will like this.
Yeah.
Like, it's short, but I'm not one to say. I don't like this whole time versus value thing. Like,
yeah,
the value is in the experience of the game. So
just
remember, it's coming from the same people who made Flower. So
yeah,
it's got that tone to it,
which was wonderful, in my opinion, wonderful game. But
yeah,
it was
cool.
It was like hours of just doing this with your controller.
Yeah,
I didn't care for Flower at all. Like, I just was like.
I thought it was really pretty, but I got
it was like a
frustrated
tech demo.
Or bored with it alternately.
And I think this is more game than Flower, to be honest. Like, you do jump, you do move your dude around, and it has co-op in it, which is kind of neat. It's got very interesting co-op. So
right, yeah. Andrew really struggled with scoring it because you can't pick your person you're with and stuff like
that's all part of the experience.
And I was like, well, I said, look, I said, as a co-op game, I said. Is it something like you have to experience in co-op?
Yeah.
And he's like, absolutely. That's what makes it so amazing. He's like, it's co-op like it's never been done before. And it just, and I was like, well, then it's a five. I said, it doesn't matter that you can't pick.
But Nick, it's not consistent.
Sure it is. It fits our description perfectly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I brought the thread drama into
Play Journey now. Just go play Journey.
You are banned from this podcast.
All right, let's move on. And a new SimCity was announced at the Games Developers Conference. It's coming in 2013, and it looks really, really slick. I mean, it is literally your little, like, diorama model, tiny little people city.
Kirby roads.
but what's cool about it is they're touting that it is going to have cooperative play. I don't know if any of you guys have played... I wrote about it. There's a recent City game, too.
Cities XL.
Yes, Cities XL, which kind of has like an MMO aspect to it. Basically, the cities that border you, and that you can do stuff, you can trade stuff with and set up routes with and things like that. But what they're saying for SimCity 2013 is there's actually going to be like scenarios that you have to solve with other people and things like that. So
yeah,
looks cool. There's a whole new engine being designed for this thing, and they said like basically instead of like simulating things that would happen, like it happens from the inside, like what the people are doing in it is what creates what happens in the city, which is kind of an interesting way to go about doing things.
I just like the idea of, you know, in the old Sim Cities where you would put the, oh, let's do light residential, and you just put it down and it grows. In this, when you build something, it's got a wicked animation of it either popping out of the ground or dropping in. Like, it's super cool looking. So,
yeah.
I never thought I'd be excited about a Sim City again, which is kind of neat. And yeah, with that,
I haven't played a Sim City since Sim City 2000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't played a Sim City since a dinosaur wrecked my. Never mind.
But actually, no, I did play the one with on the Super Nintendo with Will Wright's little
avatar guy.
Avatar. Yeah.
I used to play SimCity 2000 like in co-op. We basically play hot seat co-op. Be like, okay, for this 30, you know, next 30 minutes, you've got the city.
Yeah.
Don't destroy it.
Yeah, definitely. And, I did that with my cousin.
And then it was like, all right, it's your turn. And there's Godzilla.
Yeah, you're like, yeah. What?
You're just like,
ah. We actually, I remember one time we actually played, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, we were like 12 or 11. And like, all right, we got to go to bed. Let's just leave it running and see what happens. And like, we got up in the morning. We had all this money and all these arcology and this stuff. We were
wow,
like, this is the best thing ever.
All these taxpayers looking for money.
At least you didn't wake up in the morning and see that your entire city was in fire.
Yeah,
it survived the night. So
nice.
Let's move on. And Assassin's Creed 3, will it have co-op? I don't know. Either way, it looks really freaking cool because it's going to be set in the American Revolution. The key art and stuff that's been released so far and the teaser trailer, just really, really enticing. I don't think there's been a game set during that time period. Like, I can't think of a AAA game anyway.
I was going to say, what was that one where you transported through time and it was the first
Darkest
person?
Of Days
that's
or whatever.
That's the one.
Yeah.
I don't think it went to the Revolution, though.
That was
did
the
you?
Civil War.
Civil
right?
War,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Isn't there an old...
It's the same
isn't there
to
a
me.
Sid Meier's...
that was
Sid
a
Civ
game. That was a Civil War game, Gettysburg he had, which was really cool.
I thought there was an American Revolution one. I'm pretty sure there's been a few Sims.
There might be like a tactical strategy kind of a thing.
Yeah,
the hex grid, old
things.
School
nothing
style.
Like this, though.
No, oh, Koei's Liberty or Death for the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
It was Nobunga's
Did you hear
ambition
the crickets chirp
transposed
when you...
as the American Revolution.
Okay, so there we go.
Oh, yes,
the one other game.
Yeah. I am sorry for pulling that like out of the darkest recesses of my mind.
Wow, that's almost as hard as pronouncing the main character's name.
Yeah.
What, Connor?
That, no, like,
yeah.
Ragadon.
That's the white man's name for him.
and Mike, what did I say his name should have been?
I don't think I can repeat it if I remember right.
I seem to forget.
I said they should have just named them Dances with Knives.
Yes.
That would be sweet. So.
Yeah, that was.
But yeah, so that looks really cool. Yeah, but definitely. The rumor is that there was an Xbox Live posting that said it was going to have 4-player co-op. So we'll see.
It's probably going to be like one of their multiplayer modes, like
which is
games.
Fine. But I think that kind of a mode has some potential in that setting and that style.
All I know is this next generation Ezio, that's what I'm going to call him. needs to have a moment where he, you know, shouts, "I will find you!" And then he jumps off a waterfall. That's all that it needs to have. That's all it needs. And we're getting cross conversations between ourselves and the dog.
and pets. I'm surprised Mogwai hasn't made a guest appearance yet.
Let's see, I just
sent Nick the link. I'm not full of it.
I believe you. I'll look at it then. So Jason posted a really great story from the devs at Cadenza on their new game. Actually, well, I should say the devs at Convention wrote this for us.
I mean, you're right. I posted the story, but they had I'd give all the credit to them.
So they have a new game coming out called Retrovirus that they've been working on. And they posted a really great look at kind of the behind-the-scenes thought process of adding co-op and playtesting it and reasons to add it, why it's, you know, finding the fun in it.
And please too, I mean, for everyone who listens to this and, you know, watches the video or whatever online, feel free to send me an email, jlove@cooptimus.com, and love to hear feedback from you guys about what you think about this, because it's one of the features that, it's one of the elements of this feature that I always wanted to get going. Like, I've been interested in game developer stories since I started really writing about games and, like, what thought processes that they have, and I actually bugged Nick recently, and hopefully the next one of these will come from our very own Mr. Paleo. Yeah, you do. But it's been great hearing a lot of these stories, because whenever you go out and you talk with any developers and you start just outside of like any sort of formal play session or Q&A, when you start just shooting the breeze with them and start asking them some of what they did, they have a lot to say. And it's a lot of it's very interesting of this is the people who make the games that we love. And this is what's influenced them and how they came to some of these decisions that sometimes we just take for granted. So I wanted to kind of try and bring some of that with these this kind of a feature. And Cadenza and Final Form, those two studios so far have done features for this that have been really good insights. And anyone who's interested in game design and just how games get made, definitely read those and check them out.
I'm sure you can get the folks at Misfits Attic. I don't know if you've been following a virus named Tom at all.
Yeah.
I've been really friendly with Tim over there. He's a really good guy, and he's been helping me actually with some of my development stuff. And kind of critiquing some things for me, and I'm sure he'd love to do something like that.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because of the Liberty Death game, and then suddenly I remember playing this. I gotta reach out. Like, and absolutely, any sort of indie devs out there that you listen to our podcast and stuff, feel free to drop me a line, send me an email, and let me know too, because we do. I mean, like, we want to hear your stories. Those are the kind of things I know a lot of our audience is interested in, too. So
yeah. You know who gave us a really good interview back, God, almost 2 years ago now, was Andy Schatz, the guy who's developing Monaco.
Yeah.
Gave us a really good story.
Yeah, I want to get him one of these days when he gets closer to wrapping up that.
I bug him every PAX, and he's always more than happy to talk.
So he just switched engines, actually, for the game. I saw a couple tweets or something from him that he switched into a C++-based engine and stuff, and he was having to relearn C++ for some of the stuff. And
is Andy
Schatz... It's never going to get released.
It's like, is Phil Fish and Andy Schatz having a race to make the longest dev time of an indie game? Is that how this works?
Phil Fish is distracting us with supposed racist comments, so, you know...
It's the slowest race in history. Yes. Like, each one, like, suddenly is, I'm going to move mine now back to Turbo Pascal.
I wish those guys the best. It's just like, you...
Oh, I have a feeling he did it. He had to do it because of cross-platform type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was doing some wacky stuff.
Yeah.
With the... some of the crazy programming techniques he was talking about.
Yeah, he was storing the levels and images and stuff like that, like the level data. And so, well, speaking of like indie stuff, I need to do my shameless plug for the podcast.
Of course.
We released an interview with our composer from Blue Shield Alliance, Sean Beeson, and released the theme song that he composed for it. So. You guys got to head out there. You can head to blueshieldalliance.com to check that out and download it for free. And, I mean, I've been posting basically two things a week on the BSA site to kind of keep some content rolling, character backgrounds. We just started posting some ship stuff about the ships in the game. So,
yeah, no, right now... It's good dev diaries happening there. It's interesting to see it because, like, I'm once removed from it. I know a lot about the game, but it's still cool to kind of like hear it from your perspective. So
So I'm working on the game, and it's still interesting to hear hear Nick talk about it sometimes.
What goes on that B8 Penguin's head?
Head engineer Dana Alston is smoking.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, what did I say when you did the first sketch? I was like, well, I think she needs to be a little more feminine, or
yeah,
what was the word?
I came up with this just like a really fast bad sketch, and I was like, is this kind of what you're aiming at? He's like, yeah, that's okay. It needs to be a little more.
I can't remember the word.
Womanly.
Yeah, womanly or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
so she needs bigger tits, right? To give her bigger tits, right? He's like,
yeah, maybe.
It's like, wow, okay. Well, at least we're being honest. I think I was still tasteful.
You know what kind of cracks me up though, is I looked at both head engineer Dana Alston and who's the other one that's
the
up
dwarven
there?
Dwarven battle cruise manager.
No, Admiral Herman Alvarez. And you know what I said? I said, I know Mike's doing the artwork. You know why? And the admiral's fucking Mike, and the head engineer is his wife.
Oh, incepted. Nice. I like it.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think I look quite as cool as Alvarez. He's got a pretty bitchin' scar.
He does.
Well, we can change that, so.
My favorite character to draw out of all those is Valgard. Because he's got a bitchin' beard.
Yeah. Let's move on. Keep this thing rolling. And let's talk about user blogs. And this month's CCV was about next generation consoles and if we're ready or not. I don't know if you guys have been seeing, but there's been rumors around. We've been talking maybe next Xbox being announced soon. Of course, that means we got the Wii U coming. I guess that's soon, isn't it?
I don't know.
Isn't the Wii U this
fall? I don't remember.
No one really knows anymore. No one really cares.
maybe it'll be like the vitality sensor. Yeah. It's like, we announced this thing, and I don't know.
Just kidding.
Maybe.
I thought it was this fall. I guess we'll find out more at
E3. Has the Steam Box been verified? Is that still...
Valve debunked that.
Yeah, okay. they put the kibosh on it.
Which is sad, because I was actually hoping that they would do some kind of like certification or... Here's some minimum specs that would meet like 98% of the games on Steam and go forth and build.
Yeah.
And that would be really sweet.
Yeah.
But anyway, so our user blog on the topic comes from Zomf86. And he says, no, we're not ready for next-gen consoles. Not yet anyway. And he has a pretty good argument. But then he also has a really interesting perspective on maybe why we should have the next generation of consoles, and that's because kind of games and stuff are starting to stagnate a bit. And he said a new console would maybe inspire some developers to take risks and try some new things. And it's a pretty good point. And you know, we do kind of see when a new console launches, we kind of see games that test the waters in terms of like features and stuff, and a lot of times those games set the tone for a couple years into that console's life cycle.
I think it's interesting, and it's yes and no. I think part of the reason some of them tend to stagnate is because a lot of it gets focused on the graphics sometimes for these, and so graphics are always going to push certain limits within what a console and everything and an engine can handle. And so certainly a next generation that was able to handle more would push them to do, you know, more exciting things. But I also feel like all it would be a free license excuse to make Unreal Engine 5 and then, like, more rolling cubes of meat down slightly steeper inclines while lens flares bloom in the background or something.
We'll get a cameo sequel that puts a million badly modeled orcs on the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if you've seen some of the stuff though from the new Unreal Engine that they're showing off.
It looks good. I remember when they released all those. It definitely looks good, and I think it's like I said, it's not bad to push for graphics. But I think that's the more and more that people start pushing towards next generation is that they want these more graphics, like, you know, more realistic for those kind of things, which I don't think, in my opinion, pushes games necessarily as a medium. That being said, there are those developers like Heavy Rain and Quantic Dream who recently put out a demo of their latest sort of motion capture technology.
It still works on the PS3.
Yeah, and it's really amazing. I mean, like, it's amazing what they're really pushing for with that. So,
but don't you think? Okay, so that's a really good example. What they did there, if they're not limited, like if they're not spending time trying to get that to work smoothly on the PlayStation 3 or whatever, and they can spend the time on the story and on in the interaction and on the gameplay, because they're basically getting that other stuff for free, the graphics and the better audio and whatever else. Like, don't you think that kind of drives innovation, because they don't really need to focus on that so much?
Well, yeah, you're not worried on optimization more so than actually putting content into the game and focusing on that.
Because there's always that first year or so of the console is like, you get those things, they're kind of ports. You can tell that they were maybe started on the earlier system. They look prettier, but they, you know, kind of just move along.
But you also look at it like, you know, what is it now? You have third-person shooters, and everything is like, it plays like Gears.
Right.
Yeah, first-person shooters, it plays like Call of Duty or Halo. So it's that which is, you're right, the graphics engines help, because then they don't have to worry about necessarily working on that. They can, you know, develop the other parts. But the problem is that there's some degree where the graphics engine is now, well, that's taken care of, so we can just make another one of these games. You know, that's this kind of stagnation I feel like is what the real problem is just because you have those assets doesn't give you license to just, you know, kind of pump out another one of these types of games.
Right, but innovation isn't going to come from graphics per se. You might have some shiny, but that's where all these indie developers I really like.
Exactly.
They bring a novel concept, a cool game idea, or a mix of ideas that hasn't been done before, and they put it on 8-bit sprites, and it's cool. So that's...
I think the really big innovation that I would want out of a next-gen console is for someone to finally look at Steam and say, holy shit, this is where everything is happening.
Yeah.
You know, just think about all the, you know, the $1.99 to $10 games that we've been buying on Steam for the past 18 months or so that are just amazing. I mean, one of them, you know, Jamestown won one of our co-op Game of the Year awards. And it's just a little indie game that wasn't released on any other platforms until, you know, well after it came out. And I truly think that we're going to get an expected, you know, spec upgrade. We're going to have better graphics. We're going to have, you know, faster processing. But whoever's going to win the next console generation in the eyes of gamers, I think, is the one that really figures out the best mix between, you know, distribution and ease of distribution.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, Xbox Live Arcade is really damn great at, you know, pushing out like one game a week. You know, Alan Wake's American Nightmare came out and it was on like every tab of the dashboard, and you know, you could buy that game, but if you want to buy an indie game, you have to really dig into it. You look at something like Steam and it throws, you know, a big, you know, hero image of, you know, whatever the big AAA release of the week is, but then it throws like 10 more like indie games at you, like right in your face, as soon as you're looking to buy stuff. And on on both Xbox and the, you know, PlayStation right now, if you want anything that wasn't like
that
didn't have a media blitz behind it, or just released that week, you have to look. And you know, the fact that, you know, any developer that, you know, releases a relatively stable game can get on Steam and, you know, have access to, you know, that audience, and the sale mechanism is the really important one.
Yeah.
You know, games on demand are going to be huge. I mean, we talked a while back about whether the future is going to be digital distribution, and I think Nick and I were both agreeing that the next console generation isn't it, because, you know, things like broadband penetration and, you know, storage space and speed and other things like that. But if a developer can easily get his game on your service and have authoritative control over the pricing, so say Microsoft goes into the realm of Steam sales, so, you know, the big new game comes out this week and it's normally going to be $15, but we're going to release it for $10 this week, and then at the developer's whim they can drop the price to 99 cents, you know, whatever they want. I think that's the model. And, you know, you look at, you know, some of the stuff about, you know, Valve lately. It's like, I didn't know Gabe Newell was a billionaire.
Yeah.
But, you know, Steam is, you know, wildly successful. The president of, you know, a company that's only released a few games in, you know, I guess 15 years, you know.
I knew that.
Like, someone's got to be making a lot of money at Valve.
It was what? He's one of the 100 richest, or
500, I think. Yeah.
See, I knew that. I knew that because there's a cartoon, like just a little, you know, web comic that I saw of him swimming naked in a giant pile of money. So I knew he had to be a billionaire.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is, so yeah, we're going to get a spec upgrade, but you know, make it easier for people to access content on your system.
I would gladly buy a box, like I would buy the collector's edition of Diablo 3 that has all the content and just a slip of paper that says enter this code and download the game.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I don't need a disc.
Well,
you'll
actually be able to do that because the CD key, like all of Blizzard's games are available.
Are
on Battle
doing
Net.
That now, and that's like I would prefer that because I want the collector's kind of stuff for what they're giving in it. I don't want a disc. I don't need another game box somewhere at this point anymore.
I would kind of, similar to that, I'd kind of like the boxed stuff to be, like, the collector's item.
Right.
But I think that's moving slightly off of the scope of the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I would really like to see out of the next gen are people to, you know, finally get it out of their heads that, you know, graphics, you know, make everything. Like, graphics are important. You know, being able to simulate, you know, crazy worlds with, you know, ever-increasing fidelity is important. But, you know, we have all these great, you know, retro-type indie games or games that, you know, don't have the greatest graphics in the world but are really damn fun. I mean, you know...
I think, we talked about Epic a bit. And I think this generation, they really kind of solidified that, like, you don't have to worry about the graphics so much anymore because, in their case, their engine is so widely used that you have that and you get a lot of stuff for free, kind of like what we were saying earlier. You get a lot of that stuff for free. So if we get a new console, and you know they're already talking about it, and we've heard... Mark Green and kind of stuff saying, like, the next generation of console needs to at least do this because they've got the engine probably 90% done. They know what they need. They're just waiting to see what they need to, you know, to adapt to make it work.
Yeah, because they have PC hardware that can do that stuff now.
Exactly.
So they just need to figure out what is going to actually go in the next boxes so they can plan for it.
So I think in that case, like, you know, you're worried about, like, development stuff being caught up in graphics and stuff and being focused on that. And I think you can still innovate and do interesting gameplay ideas and have the pretty graphic stuff to go along with it because it's already there. You're not spending time to write an engine from scratch. And I think those consoles are going to be so complicated anyway in that sense that, you know, even look at things like things that they have to do to, like, downscale assets and models and stuff to certain amount of polygons. Next generation, they might not have to do that. They could, maybe it'll take the exact model they're working on in Maya or whatever they use, and it's just, it's in there. They're done.
Yeah.
You know, there's no intermediary steps, and there's no, you know, limitations that they have to work within. So
the biggest challenge this generation has honestly been the generation of art assets because, you know, like, huge games, you know, require, like, you look at something like Uncharted or Dead Space 2, and you look at those environments, and you're like, how long did it take to model the, you know, just this little bunk bed area? Because, you know, that's unique, these are all manually placed, and that must have taken forever.
Yeah.
Or, if it didn't take forever, they had to hire, you know, they had to hire on 10, you know, contract artists and then hire out, you know, like, you know, Massive Black and some of those other companies that do, you know, like, contract work for other companies. And, you know, how many times, like, you know, I played the latest Assassin's Creed game and it had, like, 8 different development studios roll before the game started. It's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, like, 900 people are working on this game. That is absolutely insane.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on because we're running a bit long here.
Thank
and get
you, Zomf.
Jeez, it was a good read. I thought it was.
It's a really good read. I just thumbs upped it.
Let's talk about Mass Effect 3 and its co-op because that's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
First, let's call out Locke because he organized a play session for Saturday night and then he didn't show up.
Yes.
What happened, Locke?
Boom.
I showed up.
After Nick went to bed.
Not at the appropriate playtime.
Like at 1:30 in the morning.
No, that was like, it was like 10:30. But, sorry, I didn't realize Nick had to go to bed at a baby time. But
whatever.
But, no, it was good. We got some time in. I don't know.
We had been playing for several hours before then, too.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you didn't wait for me.
No. No, we were like, where's Locke? Where's Locke? Where's Locke? All right, fuck Locke. Let's go.
And, you know, I didn't know we decided on a time. I threw out times, and I was like...
Yeah, and we said one of the times was Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, and three of us showed up Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Well, then my job was successful. We played together. Did you or did you not play the game together?
Yeah, we did.
There you
but
go.
We wanted to play it with you.
We missed you.
Oh, I was busy saving babies or something.
My pink Turian missed you.
Yeah, my imported Battlefield 3 soldier doesn't like playing with others.
So Mass Effect 3 co-op is pretty rad, and I didn't think it was going to be because I skipped the demo. Mass Effect and Uncharted are kind of like my back and forth favorite games of this generation, like just favorite trilogies. Mm-hmm. And the spoilers were I don't even want to watch trailers for this game because I don't want to be spoiled at all.
Yeah.
And it was a really hard thing. It's like everyone's playing Mass Effect demo. You should come play with us. Co-op's really fun.
Nope.
Like. No, not going to. Not going to download this. Like, you know, earn extra stuff by playing the demo. I'm like, nope, not going to do it. I got my collector's edition in the mail and, you know, taunted Nick. Amazon ran out of collector's editions. And, so anyway, I pop it in. I basically just went straight to the multiplayer. I played maybe first half hour of the campaign and start playing the multiplayer, and I was really surprised by what I found, because you start out by making a character. You can pick any of the base character classes that you can be in Mass Effect, and curiously enough, it's like you can only be human characters. I'm like, well, this is weird. It's like, so I made a human sentinel because I've been playing the sentinel in the campaign since the first game, so it was what I was familiar with, what I was comfortable with. So I started playing, you know, I got online, and I was like, alright, well, this is just going to be Horde mode. And what I found was that it wasn't simply Horde mode, it was Horde mode, but all of the power synergy that you do between your party in the single player is now accessible between your co-op partners. So, you know, someone throws, a lift, they lift an enemy, and my sentinel had warp, so, I'd toss the warp on there, and it detonates and gets everybody around it. Yeah. So, once you realize that, you find out that, I want to play sentinel, but, I just popped into this match, and I'm in the lobby, and I see that there's already another sentinel here, but there's an adept and a soldier, so maybe I want to play a class that complements what I've got a little more, so... It almost forces you naturally to spread your playtime between the classes.
Yeah,
and I was really happy with that because it's just waves of enemies and it's all the stuff you fight during the campaign. But then it just starts getting kind of crazy because you know what the enemy's weaknesses are. So if you're playing with people on a headset or you got your regular co-op buddies, you start forming like really really effective strategies on the fly. And it became a ton of fun. It opened up a lot of fun moments, like when all of us were playing and our friend Jeremy had joined our game in Locke's place, but he was the Krogan soldier. And all he really did was run around and headbutt people.
He really
because
did.
Of the, for Tuchanka! But because the rest of us were working as such an effective team, it was just funny to, like, lay some covering fire so he could run in there and headbutt people. And in stuff like Gears Horde mode, I don't think there's really much room to do that kind of stuff.
Right, everyone's basically the same.
Everybody's the same. So the unique classes work pretty well. And so you level, you put points in your character, and you can buy these booster packs with, you know, either credits or real money if you're a loser. And so you buy these booster packs, and it unlocks like weapon upgrades and supplies, so you can carry like metagel in combat or rocket launcher ammo and things like that. And I'll talk about that again in a second. But the really cool thing is that you eventually unlock like the other races, and you find out that the Turian Sentinel actually has different abilities than
the
humans.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, like, the humans get, I think they get warp and throw. Humans can do the evasive role that Shepard gets in the campaign. And, you know, you become a Turian, and you actually have a little bit more varied abilities. So you get warp and overload, which is, you know, kind of like your armor shatterer and your shield burster. And they're slower, they can take a little bit more damage, but they also can't... They're not nimble enough to dodge out of the way. So you're basically a walking tank. And all the characters...
Whereas, I'm going to interrupt real quick, whereas like the Asari, they can actually teleport back and forth, like, in between their position.
Yeah. And there's also, like, the Drell can do the little backflippy thing. And Quarians, actually, they do a sidestep rather than a roll, which is kind of... You know, if you've ever fought Geth in the single player campaign, and you're lining one up with your sniper rifle, and he does that little hop to the side, that's kind of how the Quarians work, which is it's pretty funny. It gives you reason to actually try different races in your chosen character class, which it helps keep things fresh. And you know, the addition of like the single use items, so you can give yourself like boosts. Like, you can boost your abilities for one match, and then the item's consumed. Or you can also carry four items in a battle, so you get you get rocket launcher ammo, you get metagel, you get an ammo pack, and you get shield. You know, it restores your shields.
Yeah,
I think. But so you earn all these in the booster packs that you get on offline, and. You bring them into the game, so you might have a stockpile of, like, you know, 10 or 15 of these, but you only get to bring two of each into the match.
Yeah, so you're never, like, overpowered.
Yeah, because, you know, you'll get, like, an Atlas mech dropped on you, and everyone's like, I've got the rocket launcher, and we'll just kill this guy. And, you know, you can't just, you know, noob tube your way through the game by everyone chaining rocket launchers together.
But quite like when a Banshee hits.
Oh my God, that's
the worst.
You know, the teleporting, you know, biotic pulse jerks.
Yeah.
They're so stressful because they'll, like, you know, if you're playing, you know, your squad, you're hanging out all together, and then a Banshee comes up behind you and is suddenly in the middle of everybody, and everyone starts freaking out and trying to run in a million different directions. It's just, it's really fun. It's just one of those moments, like when a witch shows up in Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh crap, the witch, we gotta run, and like, gun it down. You know, oh God, you know, this brute took me from behind, and, you know, you gotta make classy jokes.
Yep.
You classless mofos.
I was gonna say, I do really like the sort of slot machine roulette system of buying those packs. Because you're like, what am I gonna get? What am I gonna get? But it really sucks if you spend 60,000 credits or points,
and you get a shotgun,
and you're
playing an infiltrator.
Like,
you're like, yeah,
I don't want a shotgun, and you can't do anything with it. So,
well, and that's what makes it kind of worse for the fact that you can spend real money on those is that it's a gamble of what you actually get.
Yeah.
So I paid $2 for something I'll actually never use.
Yeah.
You did mention it, but I do kind of like how they tried to break it up instead of just killing guys.
Yeah,
you know, you're killing guys and doing other things too.
Oh, and they do like the capture points and the marked man stuff.
It forces you to keep moving. Like, you can't like find a place and just hole up
and
survive.
What Gears is, right?
Like, exactly. Yeah. So it keeps things moving and keeps things fresh, and it makes the maps feel a little bit bigger than I think they are.
Well, and the thing is some of the maps are actually really compact, and the strategy for fighting an enemy, like, so, like, the strategy for fighting a Reaper Force on the little laboratory map,
like
where everything's like all, yeah, it's like everything's all stacked on top of each other and compact, and then there's the mission that's in like the satellite array on the ground, and it's got bigger wide open spaces. So, you know, if you actually don't just hit random, you know, you don't do like the random game and you set things up, you might actually, you know, think about which character you're going to bring, or, you know, swap your weapons out.
Definitely.
You know, there's a lot of customization that you can do, and it's just a lot of fun, and I'm definitely going to keep playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's something where I'll play it while it's hot, but I probably won't go back after I've done the game, but that's fine. Like, I'm perfectly cool with it being in there. And
yeah,
definitely a lot of fun. Very, I'm still surprised that they made a horde mode like this for, you know, an RPG. So,
well, and you saw the stuff that came out of the new Jeff Keighley, or Jeff Keighley, you know, the Last Days of Mass Effect 3 thing, right? Where this was actually originally in a competitive FPS,
which is crazy,
as a separate game, and they said, well, that's pretty cool, but, you know, maybe we should just do a co-op mode instead. So that, you know, that made me a little happy. It's like, well, we could have had a, you know, a likely canceled Mass Effect multiplayer game, or we get a nice little bonus mode. And I think there's been some chat out there about people discovering, you know, hooks for, you know, potential multiplayer DLC. So if they can expand, like the number of races, or add new modes to it,
or more waves, and 'cause, or whatever.
Yeah, because we talked about, you know, Uncharted 3 a while back, and they keep adding, like, random co-op modes to Uncharted 3. Like, they just did the spirit, like, the shade mode.
Yeah.
And it's all the, like, the wacky stuff from the end of that game as a, you know, a horde mode type thing. So it's, I just hope that they do some interesting things with it, because I think the groundwork is there. It's a proof of, so earlier this year, and this is a bit of a divergence, we talked about, you know, the Old Republic, and how prior to that coming out, we talked about BioWare, you know, Mass Effect, like, co-op would work really great in it because it's a squad-based shooter, and there's all this synergy between the character abilities, but the conversation system, just, it'd be really hard to make that work in a multiplayer setting. But then the Old Republic came out, and more or less solve the issue. It's like, you know, if the other character, if someone else says something you don't want to say, your character, they don't put words in your character's mouth. It's their character that says it. And so, like, that ended up working surprisingly well when I was playing multiplayer there. So they've already got kind of the conversation system worked out, and now they have a proof of concept that shows that the combat system works really well as co-op and in multiplayer. So
yeah, it's fun.
If they do another Mass Effect game or another game like this, they could potentially put campaign co-op in, because they've largely solved the problems.
Yeah. They should just make it like Dark Souls, where you, like, push a thing and then someone beams down and it
can praise the sun.
No, praise the Protheans or something. Praise the artifacts.
Praise the blue suns.
That's right.
There you go.
Anyways, it's good.
I'm an eclipse man myself. All right.
Here's my other problem with the game.
Go ahead, Jason.
Wrapping up thought. For all these great characters and everything that you can do for the different classes, why do you have to name them when it doesn't mean a single thing?
Yeah. It's the most Maybe it's just so you can keep them straight.
It's the most...
That's exactly why, but come on.
It's prohibitive. It is absolutely prohibitive to the whole thing.
They also... You know why they didn't do it is because they don't want someone to put, like, XX Penis Lord in there and then have to set up a...
Dude!
I'm getting that gamer tag. I want it.
XX Penis Lord. So they don't have to set up filters and...
That is why I'm naming my Krogan now. My Krogan will be called XX Penis Lord.
Yes, you summoned the Lord.
As he goes around and heads butts everything.
Right now. That's it.
Terrible.
No, but that's exactly what it is. Because, you know, you're going to name it something really stupid and potentially offensive, and they don't want to have to deal with banning people.
That's fine. So just take it out altogether.
Oh, Drell Blunts 420.
Take it out altogether.
Yeah. All right. Let's wrap it up. So I know I've been saying it a lot, but I think next week our iPhone app will be out.
shut the front door.
Yep.
But damn. For iOS
I'll believe
version
it when I pay
5.0
cents for it.
Or
now
later.
It's going to be free.
ISO version
99 cents
or later.
Just removes the ads lock.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Day one DLC.
There's no ads either. So. I really like kind of what this guy did with it. He did some interesting kind of Apple-ish interface stuff.
Sweet.
So
he followed the human interface guidelines they provide?
I guess so. You know, it does things like... So, like... Hold on a second. Let me see if my thing's charged, and I can do a quick demo.
Oh. Hot scoops.
Yeah,
hot
the audio edition of this podcast is going to be vastly interesting for the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
This is the Mass Effect 3 ending of
this is,
our podcast.
This is where we take the...
We're going to alienate a core chunk of our user base. Right,
so,
Penis Lord says...
My battery literally just died.
Oh, boo. That's like tech blue balls, Nick.
It is.
Terrible.
See, I would bring it up on mine, but I'm waiting to update the whole iOS 5 thing, and it's not good on anything prior to iOS 5.
Did you get the beta then, Jason? I had the beta,
but then every version past 1.03 or whatever it is has been, it requires iOS version 5.
Okay. All right.
So it's not compatible going back.
So, but yeah, so he did a really good job with it, and it's just the point right now is just getting it to submit to Apple and wait for approval.
Nice.
So that's where we're at. I'm hoping next week.
Sweet.
And if you don't have an Apple device and you have Windows Phone 7 or Android, we have apps for that as well.
Go. But so what about BlackBerry? You say
Black what? Berry who? what else? Split Reason. We have T-shirts. You can go to splitreason.com/cooptimus and buy some. There's not many left. I think basically just our logo shirt at this point. There might
I
be
think
a couple.
I still saw a couple Revolution shirts.
Yeah, I think it might just be like small, maybe.
Buy them up so we can make new ones.
Yeah, it's a good idea. If you're listening to us on iTunes or Zune or whatever you are, leave us some feedback. Give us 5 stars. Tell us how awesome we are.
Just
tell
listen us how... to us, please.
Validate tell... us.
If you're watching us on YouTube, tell us how sexy we are.
Thumb up your butt, too.
Mm. What?
It's a thumbs up.
This is... Ever since the whole names, I'm not going to say it, this thing has gone off the rails.
It's Mike's fault.
And you know what? I'm going to... We had
make
a voicemail.
A number of Krogan testicles, Jason.
We actually had...
They're a delicacy, you know.
This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So you we actually what? Had two voicemails.
I am Mike Katsifrakis, and this is my favorite moment on the Co-opticast.
Get out of here.
I'm out.
Bye-bye.
Just drop the mic.
I would. How do I close right. Mike's window?
So yeah, that's our podcast, folks. Episode 83. See you later.
See ya.
Peace.